This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. Over the last 50 years, the writer Paul Theroux has traveled to most of the countries on Earth and traveled in a deep, slow, observant way most of us really never do. His novels are often about people more or less like him, people who rip themselves out of normal Western lives and go somewhere alien and maybe find out, for better or worse, who they really are. Like in his new novel, The Lower River. 62-year-old Ellis Hawk, a retailer in a Boston suburb, lights out for Malawi, where he'd worked as a Peace Corps volunteer as a young man many years before. Paul Theroux is here with me now. Paul, welcome back to Studio 360.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Kurt.
So you, like your protagonist in this novel, were a guy who grew up in Medford, Mass., and you also were a Peace Corps volunteer in Malawi when you were young and the Peace Corps was brand new. Ellis Hawk, that your main character, says that the years he spent in the Peace Corps were the best in his life. Do you have a sense that that's true of you as well?
Certainly they were among the best in my life. Ellis Hawk ended his Peace Corps career and then ran a clothing store in Medford. So you can understand why he might have thought the Peace Corps was great. Actually, the best years of your life, I think, probably are, you know, raising children or creating, writing, things like that. They go on being great, I think. But for Ellis, Africa was his Eden. He came alive there. He got away from home. He fell in love. He found people to like. And then he had to leave it. He's sort of expelled from it. So I identify with him, but I could say that the Peace Corps set me on a path into the world.
Has the Lower River been germinating ever since those days?
Very much so. When I was in Malawi, the Lower River area was called Port Herald. Port Herald was renamed Nsanje. But that area was the poorest, the most distant, the most malarial, very snaky, very. It was on the border of Portuguese East, Mozambique. So it was not on the way to anywhere. And it was really the place that every Peace Corps volunteer sort of dreaded to be sent to. I was not a volunteer there. I went there, but I had friends who were there. So the place stayed in my mind as just a forgotten corner of the country. And then I had when I was in the Peace Corps, I had a definitive experience too, which also stayed in my mind. One Christmas, I was with a group of people and they said, come to our village and have a drink. It was late at night. So I went to the village, had a drink. Next morning, I woke up and I said, that was great. Now I'm going to leave. They said, no, don't leave. Let's go get another drink. It was early in the morning. To make a very long story short, they wouldn't let me leave the village. And I thought, this is a kind of a nightmare of going to a place.
That's this book. Ellis Hawk, your character, becomes essentially imprisoned in this village.
I've written this as a story of trespassing and going to this version of a person goes on an invitation to a place, to a village, to a house, and then is not allowed to leave. To me, it's kind of a recurring theme or nightmare of mine.
For a person who spends so much of his life and work traveling, I guess that would be the ultimate nightmare.
Yes. And the idea of making a book, of writing a story about a man who is on the happiest trip of his life, the sentimental journey back to where he was the happiest, suddenly turns and keeps turning. And he's faced with one problem after another. We won't let you leave. But furthermore, it's not just they won't let him leave. They said, we're going to make you chief. You're going to be the chief. You're going to be head of it all. And here's your servant. Here's your house. And you're going to stay. This is your home, Father. This is your home. He says, no, it's not my home. Let me out of here. And suffers and then has to find a way out. So then it becomes, I guess, an adventure story, a problem that needs to be solved. And then, turns into a parable of life itself or of aid, of visit, of the other, of strangeness, of, you know, the place where you shouldn't be, that he's gone too far.
A lot of people, especially in the 60s and 70s when they were young, travel around the world cheaply and as you did, but then they stop when they turn 30 or 35. You in your various ways, have kept on doing it. Do you do it because it's your job to write these marvelous books, nonfiction and fiction, about exotic places, or do you need to do that and do it kind of roughly in some deeper way?
I used to think that I did it just for the compulsion to move, just to keep moving, to go. Stevenson has a line like that. Just the whole thing is just keep moving. D.H. Lawrence says that, you know, above all, just get out of the house, just keep moving.
Huck Finn, did that, for instance.
Yeah, it's lighting out for the territory. But I think the only worthwhile way of doing it is the old laborious way. You said something in your introduction about that. But I mean, the old laborious way of traveling overland on the road is the thing. That's the, if you're going to write about it, you can't jet from capital to capital and get, you know, people giving you a kiss on both cheeks. You really need to be insulted at the border and get in a ramshackle bus or train and travel on, because that's how people really live. How they're actually treated in a country is how they're treated in the hinterland. But you know, it's not necessary to suffer. So I'm getting too old for buses and, you know, disgusting meals.
When you're traveling to these places that most of us don't travel, in ways that most of us don't travel, do you still have sort of epiphanies? Do you still say, oh, that's a surprise, I never thought of it that way about this place or this kind of person or this village? Or have you seen it all, been there, done that too many times?
That's an interesting question. I had this feeling that when people, when they're neglected, they develop in their own way. I noticed that when I'm in a village like that, when I was in southern Angola, just creeping along in my own hopeless way, I noticed that people... that two things happen. One is they keep their traditions. There's a thing called the Efundulis ceremony among the Kwanyama people, and it's basically just a, you know, coming of age ceremony. And I noticed I lucked into a place where they had the ceremony. It's just, you know, girls who are nubile. Nubile means marriageable, you know, in the technical sense. So it's a nubility ceremony. Now, that doesn't happen in the capital. It doesn't happen where, you know, where there's missionaries and so forth. This is a place that's completely left to itself. So a place left to itself becomes more itself, and people devise remedies for whatever problems they have. You know, they're homegrown remedies, and sometimes those work better than the ones imposed from the outside. So to answer your question, do I get to places and think, my goodness, I hadn't thought of that? Well, that was an epiphany that I had. I thought, you know, these people have been neglected and ignored and abandoned, but they found a way to keep their lives intact. And I liked that. And I was sort of impressed by it.
This is your 30-something novel. You've written, I don't know, a dozen, 15 more nonfiction books. How has your career worked out compared to what you'd imagined or hoped it would be, say, 30 years ago?
Yeah, more like 40, because I published my first book in 67. You know, when you start out writing, you choose a role model, there are many role models: Henry Miller, Graham Greene, you know, V.S. Naipaul. In my life, lots of mentors and lots of writer friends. And I just hoped that I could, you know, make a living, go on writing, and find a public, find people who liked reading my books. And I feel as if I've done that. I mean, I wasn't looking for success. I was looking for some kind of achievement. And someone who was like mine, people like me, people who travel, people who would like to travel but want to read about it. And I have no complaints. I really have no complaints.
And do you still get properly excited about the book you're working on? I'm just trying to get a sense of how, if you still are as robustly committed to this lucky job you have.
As a writer, it's groping in the dark. And I think getting up every morning to solve that problem, to face it, to develop it further, to, you know, have the character confront that destiny is really a very exciting thing. It's the thing that animates me, and it's the thing I like doing best.
That's good to hear. Paul Theroux, thank you very much.
Thank you, Kurt.
Paul Theroux's new novel, The Lower River, is out right now.